This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 118 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. Earlier this year, Brian Hickey and Patty Lennon joined us to discuss Total Action Force Volume 2. Their Kickstarter was successful, and over the summer they have been working diligently on both that and on Total RoboSkull, which you already know about if you backed Skeletron's RoboSkull late last year. We got back together this time to discuss updates to both of these books and a third book that I've been reading digitally and loving. There were some audio and connection issues during this conversation, but the conversation itself is so incredible that I don't think you'll mind. Go to totaltoybooks.com. And you can pre-order Total Action Force Volume 2 if you missed the Kickstarter. And you can check out Creating Adventure, the digital book, for now. Brian, Patty, I've already gushed. So just a simple thank you for joining us once again.
Down to the wire now. I'm going to try and meet a deadline to get the book to Hasbro this Friday. Just chatting to Patty before the call. It's going to be tight. It's going to be very tight.
This isn't Hasbro licensing it. It's just Hasbro signing off on the things that the artwork and stuff, right?
It's Hasbro publishing. So actually this time we're expecting a proper deep dive on it, because last time it was Hasbro UK and they did not care. This time it's Hasbro publishing and they do. The extent of the feedback we got on volume one was, that looks lovely, right? It was something like that, but it does from Hasbro. This time we're dealing directly with Michael Kelly, who is the head of Hasbro Publishing. And so we're expecting him to take his time with us. We're hoping he'd turn around in 3 or 4 weeks for us, and then we can go to print in October.
Wow. So this is why this one has a pre-order outside of the Kickstarter.
See, with the first one, we just ordered the amount of books that we needed for the backers, because we honestly didn't think anybody else would want it. And we were kind of shocked the amount of people who kind of came looking to get a book, and we're still asking to get a copy of the first book. So with this book here, we figured, well, look, we'll do a small overrun. We'll have a small number of pieces. It's not even 100 copies that we'll have to sell after the Kickstarter. So the pre-orders are up for that now.
Will the pre-order touch volume one at all, or is volume one just done and dusted?
We'll do another Kickstarter for volume one to do a reprint. But it'll be a soft cover edition, you know, because we want to make sure the original backers, they backed it, they have their value with that first. But I suppose it's a first edition. There'll only ever be one first edition, so they've got their value in that anyway.
Sure.
It would be great to redo it as a hardcover, but it adds more cost and we'd need more. We don't know what the demand is for a second edition of volume one until we get it to Kickstarter and see how it takes off from there.
From my perspective, I want everybody to have this, so I don't care if it's hard, soft, foil, shiny, metallic, as long as everybody gets a copy of this, because version one or volume one is incredible. I've actually read it more than once now.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. But, you know, I'm curious because most people, well, I'm including some of our really good friends here, they just look at the pictures and they go, yeah, it looks great. I haven't read it yet, but, I'll get to it. We'll read it. But, you know, for someone who's read it, and I've read it, many times, not just proofing it, but also after we got it in hand, but what did you think of the text content?
That was kind of the thing, is I know what the Action Force figures look like. I can go on eBay at any time and see what the Action Force figures look like. I don't need your book to say, this is what an SAS looks like, or this is what Z-Force looks like, or Captain Skip. So to have your book where you have the dios and you've put everybody in one by the year in a single picture where I can see that, that's good. In being able to read it, then I get the backstory of the town it came from, the lore with dumping it or getting rid of it, how many touch points or similarities there were between Palitoy and Hasbro before they ever became a conjoined thing, before Hasbro bought them, the newspapers, the articles, the comics, all of that stuff. And then I'm a comic guy, so the fact that there's little bios of all the different creators, that's monumental, because I'm not going to find that from any old person, regardless of where they are in the world, with an iPhone. I'm not going to find that on Facebook or eBay. I'm not going to find that on Instagram. To me, the marriage of your skill as the building dios out of the garbage you won't let your family throw away, you already know how incredible I find them. To marry that with Patty's words and both of your research and your interviews, the conversations you've had with people that I'm never going to have a touch point with outside of a name, I think is amazing. And I think if people are just flipping through it, they're missing such a large portion of that book. It's part of why, to me, these things are necessary. I want to know. And this is the thing that I talk about a lot with my kid, is access breeds passion. Access breeds love. Just purchasing them is enjoyment, but knowing, having that information, that's where I fall in love.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why it's important to me to have you guys on the bookshelf, not just because I like you guys, but because there's more to it than just that.
That's brilliant.
That's a very long-winded answer to a very simple question.
I read the text as it came in, as it was, you know, typesetting it into the book, then proofreading it afterwards, and then kind of reading it again when I had the hard copy in hand. And, you know, Patty and David did a brilliant job deep diving into a story that had never been told before in that detail. And that's really what I wanted that first book to be, was to tell the story of the people behind Action Force and the story of Action Force itself. And the lads, they did a brilliant job on it. And to think that, you know, I'm working on volume two now, the guys have done it again. They've done it all over again. Like, the content for volume two is amazing.
I'm hungry for it.
It's in fact, me and Patty were just talking there. The content's so good, we don't have enough pages. We had this problem on the last book too. So it's like, how are we going to get all this content in and still make it look good? Because we can't just, you know, we could just squash it all in, but then it wouldn't be a very beautiful looking book. So it's trying to get that balance right, you know?
I'm certainly hungry for volume two. The minute you guys went live, I was backing it. I was in. It's interesting how much fire has been behind the Action Force brand, at least over here, over the last 5 to 8 years.
Wow.
It just really seems like 5, 6, 7 years ago, things were fairly reasonable to get, and now nothing is reasonable to get. Wow. The fervor for Action Force has really, really taken hold over here.
I think it really kicked off when Larry started dropping, like, the Red Shadows and the RoboSkull into his comics. Chris inadvertently caused the market, the eBay market for the RoboSkull, to quadruple price because he put so much praise out there for the vehicle. Then people were like, that actually is awesome.
The reason Larry obviously dropped the Red Shadows in the comic is because he came to Roll Call, and that's where he learned about Action Force for the first time.
Really?
Yeah, so he left Roll Call. I think it was it 2014 he came?
Yeah, it was 2014, because we had Total Retaliation with us.
Yeah, that's right. And Larry was at that show, and he got introduced to Action Force there. And then he started bringing in the Red Shadows into the comic. So that it just happens that Dave Three's fault, basically.
That's interesting that Larry had worked on the brand at that point for 32 years and was just now learning about Action Force. He really keeps himself kind of in a tight bubble, it seems.
There's no reason why he would have known about Action Force back in the 80s, because the Action Force universe and the G.I. Joe universe were totally separate from each other, on separated geographically. And when Hasbro got assigned the Action Force IP, We just ditched all the Palatoy canon straight away and just said, we're going with our toys now. It's going to be our characters. If Larry did ever hear of Action Force in the 80s, it would have been Hasbro's Action Force at that stage.
That's fair.
It was Flint, Lady J, Footloose, Barbecue, Destro. You know, it's all characters that he would have known and created anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense, because even when Marvel was reprinting the Action Force comics, they were American G.I. Joe, turned to Action Force, and then reprinted back over here.
It's actually something we found out from interviews along the creators of Action Force Weekly and Monthly. They were all aware of what Larry was doing, because even, obviously, they had access to his comics. But a lot of them even knew G.I. Joe, because G.I. Joe was a well-known comic at the time, and most of the guys working on Action Force would have been quite young comics creators. So they were already kind of growing up having read Larry's comics for the prior 2 or 3 years. And it's brought up in one of the interviews we did that they all knew Silent Interlude because everybody had been talking about Silent Interlude in the office. You know, long before they were doing Action Force, they were familiar with G.I. Joe.
I knew Silent Interlude was impactful years after, but I didn't realize it was that impactful immediately, even in other countries.
Yeah, it seems that certainly in the comics, people who were in the comics know.
Sure.
You know, people who were interested in drawing comics were well aware of it, certainly by 1987, they were well aware of it as being like something you have to read.
I don't know. I wish they had done a better job at bringing original Action Force and Battle Action Force this way. Everybody's done a great job at sending it out, but not bringing it back. And so, you know, I didn't know about Battle Action Force until I was an adult, and then it's expensive to get, or it's $2 to buy the comic, $23 to get the shipping. And you're just like, well.
You think back to that kind of comics industry at that time, you know, in the 80s, IPC magazines certainly didn't seem to have an appetite to get Battle into the US markets. You know, the comic Battle and some of its content, starting with some of the 2000 AD characters that they owned. Yes, there was a push to kind of, you know, reprint them in the American format, you know, Halo Jones and Nemesis the Warlock and Judge Dredd and even, you know, Slania. And they just get squashed and compressed down. That they were trying to get them out there, but doesn't seem to be the same drive with their war comics. Whereas Marvel UK, you know, by comparison, they were creating content in the American format to sell in Britain and Ireland, with the specific purpose of trying to break into and grow their sales in America. They were much more forward-thinking than the guys in IPC. You know, the quality of the paper was different. The American process for separate pencil, separate person for inks, separate person for colors. It was full color throughout. I mean, I don't know where I'm going on a very long-winded way around this, but like the appetite was there in Marvel UK to kind of, yeah, we're going to bring comics into the 21st century. We're going to get it into the American market, whereas it seemed like more of an afterthought for IPC.
Obviously, Action Force Monthly was designed to be sold in the direct market in the US, being printed here for sale here, but they also hoped to be able to sell X number of peasant copies directly to comic shops, as you know, that direct market was really opening up there in the late 80s, early 90s. Action Force Monthly was designed to fill that market. Marvel UK released a couple of American format comics at that time, or were selling them to America. They also did Dragon's Claws that Sam Furman and Jeff Senior wrote. And funnily enough, it was the Action Force comic that was by far the most successful of those attempts to break into the American market. I think, though, they kind of said, what we found for researching the book is that the Marvel USA didn't like the fact that Marvel UK was trying to use one of their own brands against them to get into the American market. They were like, you can't keep your G.I. Joe comics. And that's part of the reason why Action Force Monthly ended when it did, because it was still profitable. It was still making money. But I think it was there seems to have been some sort of editorial pushback from Marvel US senior management to say, stop doing that.
You know, I never gave that any thought, but that I was finding and buying, collecting Action Force Monthly from comic book shops out of, you know, back issue bins. I guess I just always assumed that somebody had some international collection that they were selling to a local shop. I never gave it a second thought. So that makes a lot of sense. That's interesting. A hell of a blind spot on my part, because I bought Action Force Monthly from multiple comic shops and never once gave it any deeper thought than...
No, it didn't indeed. Yeah, it was worth anything because Marvel UK was actually distributing it.
Yeah, a lot of expats are selling their comic book collection.
Included in the book, and I'm just going to drop this here now, there's going to be two little images included in the book, and they're classified ads. One from New England Comics in 1987, which was in an X-Men comic. And the other one is for Hot Comics, 1988. And they both list Action Force comics. So G.I. Joe is Action Force, or Action Force, The Adventures of G.I. Joe in England. On the Hot Comics little classified ad, it's listing issues 1 and 2. This will be of the monthly for $3. And in brackets, it has beside them scarce/hot.
Wow. That's incredible. So volume 2, this is what it covers, right? It's covering the rename, the repaints of what I grew up with versus what you guys grew up with, and then the comics as well.
It starts a little bit later than kind of Gaucho and Jammer. So this is picking up where Palitori now out of the picture altogether. They're now gone. So General Mills have shut down the Palitori design department in, was it 85?
84.
Or 84. And then Hasbro then approached them to kind of distribute G.I. Joe figures as Action Force in the UK, which they do in 85. And that's what we call as Action Force Series 3. So it was distributed by Palitoy. But then in 86, Hasbro move into the UK. They set up their own company there. And they do a deal with Palitoy to have the Action Force IP assigned over to Hasbro. So then they have full ownership over that. And Palitoy are now completely out of the picture.
So this is where we go from Gaucho to Flint.
Yeah. To Flint, yes. And that's really where Battle Action Force winds down, at, you know, end of 86. And then in 87, you get the Hasbro International Heroes hits the stage. Hasbro's Action Force International Heroes is launched. So we have the toys at retail, and then the supporting comic comes out then as well. And our book picks up at this point.
This is why I need your book. This is why I need this kind of information. I need to understand more around, you know, this era, because I have some of this. I know a little bit here and there. I know you guys had Flint and he was kind of the Duke for you guys. I know I have not quite all, but most of the magazine sized comics. I found out recently from Roger and Josh that your guys' Incredible Hulk magazine size had a ton of G.I. Joe stuff in it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Which I had no idea. Like, I knew Transformers did, and I have all the G.I. Joe stuff, but now I've got to hunt for Incredible Hulk stuff, which is...
For the completists.
You guys now have... What year did this... Like, what year are we going from? We're going from 85 all the way through 94, 97...
We covered 82 to 85 in volume 1 in Battle Years. There's no new product at all in 86 because you were kind of in that interstitial stage where Palitoy was shutting down but Hasbro hadn't yet bought the IP. So Hasbro buy the IP on the 12th of September 1986. We were able to find that information in the company's office here. So they bought the name and the IP rights to Palitoy's Action Force on the 12th of September 86. And from then on, started planning to relaunch the line for 87 in the UK, along with a Marvel comic. So Richard Starkings was asked to be the editor of the Marvel Weekly comic in late 86. He's not exactly sure of the date. So basically, where we're coming from is September 86 to end of 1989 is the last Action Force branded toys that were released here. So we're covering that kind of three-year period, 86 to 89. For the comics, for the toys, obviously, and then for the comics, which is Action Force Weekly and Monthly. And then the toy line was renamed. It was renamed to G.I. Joe the Action Force for 1990, and then just became G.I. Joe for 91, 92, 93, 94. So we're covering basically 86 to 89, more or less. There are annuals in 1991 and 1992, but they're mostly just reprints of what have been the yearbooks and G.I. Joe, the Larry Hama written yearbook, with some prose stories and some character profiles and so on. And the last new story is the 1992 annual, which would have been released here in September 1991. So the way they do annuals in the UK, and they still do it this way, is the annuals are released for like the Christmas market, and their date of the year the next year. Annual, it's dated 1990, when it was released in 1989 and so on. So 1992 is the last new story. It's called High Finance. The artist has Johnson on it. So we do mention those comic stories because there were so few of them. Between 1989 and 1992, the number of stories has dropped off a cliff. And there's literally only two or three new stories. So we do cover them in the book because there's nowhere else to put them. By that stage, it's just G.I. Joe in this market, and it's the same stuff you guys got the year earlier. So it's like repacks, right? It's exactly the same product.
Paddy put together a really nice set timeline from 1964 to 1994. That's just going to be one spread in the book. So for people who just want to get the quick capsule Action Force history, they can go from 66 to 94 in two pages. What you see is when you look at that is that Hasbro and Palitoy were intrinsically linked from the very beginning, but also worked completely independently and separately. And it's just really wonderful how the two companies kind of came together and then went their separate way. But we got something amazing out of it. 94 was the last release as we got it retail until 2009, which would have been Rise of Cobra.
Did you guys not get the 97 and all of the late 90s stuff? That
no, none of that stuff came out over here. Certainly not in Ireland anyway. It was dead for 15 years. Occasionally the import shops got in certain things. We have the 25th anniversary product was available in some of the comic shops here. But in terms of mass retail, it just died a death. I wasn't seen here for 15 years.
The same way that I was oblivious as I'm buying Action Force monthly as an adult. You know, as a kid, from year to year, I'm just getting the new toys. And I don't really see the difference between 82, 83 green shirts and 87 because I'm there in that gradual process. And maybe if I had made it to 93 or 94, I would start to notice as the sprue weapons came out and things like that. But a lot of that stuff was really blind. They could have changed artists 15 times instead of just two or three in my time, or brand managers or anything else. But you guys are seeing a true brand change, right? You're walking into your local shop looking for Action Force and you're finding G.I. Joe the Action Force or just G.I. Joe. Like, how do you guys grow up with that? How does that feel? Do you know that's an American thing? Are you oblivious because you don't give a shit and it's just the toys? If that makes sense.
So I wasn't very familiar with the Palitoy Action Force. It was a little bit too early for me. Sorry, I'm not yet 40. for me, the Palitoy stuff was stuff my older brother owned, or the older kids on the street owned. For me, when I was five when Action Force International Heroes came out, Marvel UK Weekly was my first comic. So that was Action Force to me. The fact that there's this Palitoy toy line, it didn't register with me at all. And then obviously as Action Force, Hasbro Action Force continued here, I did notice the transition to G.I. Joe the Action Force, because obviously the advertising changed. There's a comic which we discuss in the book called Divided We Fall, where they basically, in 1989, they explain away the name change in the comic. It's a short story where, G.I. Joe are being beaten by Cobra and Action Force are being beaten by Cobra because they don't work together good enough.
Wow.
So they decide, well, we have to sign a treaty and decide that we have a shared command structure now. And that was the in-universe explanation as to why it changed to G.I. Joe, the Action Force. There used to be two organizations who, kind of, like the UN, how this part of the UN works with this part of the UN. But they were separate, but separate command structures and so on. And then they decided from 1989, but we work together now. We all report into General Hawke. That's the way the comic came printed with a treaty you could sign and send into Hasbro UK, which puts you on their marketing list.
Genius.
By signing this treaty that sort of recognized the American generalship of G.I. Joe, the Action Force. When they bedded that down over the course of 1990, they just changed it to G.I. Joe from 1991 because you kids knew what that meant by then. You had a year of G.I. Joe, the Action Force. You knew what G.I. Joe was now. So we can just issue the same boxes in Ireland. But that's quite funny. And it's those little things actually that as a kid, I just accepted them. And then as an adult, I'm realizing, oh, there's a shocking marketing explanation for all that. Like, perfect example. In Action Force Weekly, they reprinted Silent Interlude. But because it wasn't exactly being published at the same time in the storyline that Action Force Weekly had gotten to, they had to set up preview pages, like prologue pages and epilogue pages. And it's a different reason why Scarlet has been kidnapped. They had these, the prologue pages show Scarlet being kidnapped in London and taken to Destro's castle. Silent Interlude is reprinted in full across two issues of Action Force Weekly. And then there's an epilogue pages done by Mike Collins and the artist over here. It shows Snake Eyes changing from his version 1 outfit into his version 2 outfit in the epilogue. Because he was always drawn in his version 2 outfit here because he never got the version 1 toy. So you have him in his version 2 outfit in the prologue scene where Scarlet gets kidnapped. He's in his version 1 outfit for the reprint of Scarlet Interlude. And then as he and Scarlet escape on a Hercules C-130, you see him literally change and put on the version 2 visor, because that's how he was sold here. And I had read that page a million times as a kid. And I really made the connection when I was rereading it for this book. I'm like, that's why they did that. It was just marketing shit.
This is why he looked like Stalker for a page.
Yeah, there's an entire 3-page sequence to explain away why he was in the wrong costume.
That's genius.
That's amazing.
It didn't occur to me as a kid. It was just like, oh, it's just Snake Eyes. He's just dressed differently. Even though I didn't own a version 1 Snake Eyes, that toy wasn't out here. It was out here as Stalker, you know, and I didn't know that at the time, obviously. But it's still Snake Eyes in Silent Interlude. You know, because that's the character. You know, he's a silent dude breaking into a castle. So suddenly now I'm realizing, oh, that's just marketing bullshit they made up to it. Who's made that?
That's kind of the magic of anything that's targeted to kids, is when we're kids, we don't really care about like stuff that doesn't make sense.
But it's funny that the editors at Marvel UK obviously cared, because they commissioned someone to write and draw 3 pages of a story to make sure that you explained away the wrong costume.
And the art has to match the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Going back to your original question there, Jason, I grew up with the palette toy version of Action Force. And then in my teens, I mean, I was still collecting and playing with action figures like well into my teens, you know, much to my parents' kind of dismay. but I can remember I was collecting the International Heroes in 87. I had a few of those, but you know, not a whole lot. I can certainly remember the comic changed. It went from Battle Action Force to Action Force, but I wasn't really aware of a change in ownership. It was still Action Force, you know. The more articulated figures, we were getting them anyway with Palatoy as well. So we were kind of eased into that change, you know, to the more articulated figures. And then I have this memory of when Action Force became G.I. Joe, the Action Force. I have a very clear memory of seeing in a comic that they were promoting the change in the comic. And it wasn't the Transformers issue there that Patty mentioned, because I didn't read the Transformers comics, but it was an Action Force comic that said going forward is going to be called G.I. Joe, the Action Force. And then I stopped buying it then. None of my Action Force monthlies have that in them. I haven't yet found the comic where I read that notification of the change. But I have a very clear memory of reading that. The first G.I. Joe comic I saw had Snake Eyes on the cover, but I didn't stick with it then after that. I just got a guitar and got into music, and my you know, interest shifted for a couple of decades.
At least for me, since Larry wrote it, Cobra Commander was, you know, a shyster, a car salesman made demagogue who stood in front of a crowd of angry middle-class people and victimized them and then created a terrorist organization out of it. But Destro clearly was Scottish. And the Baroness was maybe American, maybe European, maybe American who expatted to Europe. It was never really 100% clear. If you watch the cartoon, she was clearly general European. Larry has always said that when he writes her, she's a rich American brat who went overseas and then came back with America's Evil and Must Die. It never changed for me. Like, the only thing that really changed was I hit 15. And so I was kind of curious. That was fun. So you guys mentioned England and Ireland a lot.
Europe would have been under Hasbro. Europe or Hasbro in the various countries, Hasbro Spain, Hasbro Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, and so on. Most of the European countries, it was just called G.I. Joe, like in Spain, for example, because covering G.I. Joe in España. It was called G.I. Joe in the Nordic countries, and in Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. But it was called Action Force in Germany. So in Germany, from 1989, they started getting G.I. Joe called up, but rebranded as Action Force. Pretty much after Action Force had been phased out in the UK, Germany started getting Action Force.
What a mess.
What a mess.
Well, Germany would have had the Palitoy Action Force, so the brand would have been known in Germany. Maybe there was reasons to kind of, you know, to keep that sort of, you know, that brand equity, to keep the Action Force brand equity alive in the German market, you know.
Or depending on who was helping Hasbro distribute, you know, like in Spain, they were David and them were saying that it was Milton Bradley.
Yeah, although they basically just bought Milton Bradley. So they didn't change the name in Europe, but they changed the name in Ireland.
Oh, okay.
So Hasbro UK moved in here by buying Milton Bradley and just changing the name to Hasbro UK. But they kept the Milton Bradley branding in Europe. So it's a whole big mess of corporate governance. To show you how dedicated I was to the research, I actually went to the company's offices, websites in the UK and Ireland to try to figure out, you know, the corporate structure at the time to see who owns who and who bought who. So we ended up getting, and Brian will attest to this, we ended up getting a bunch of the company accounts and company memorandums of association and stuff from 86, 87 and 89 from the company's offices, registries and so on, just to figure out, right, so who bought who and who owned who and who was the directors and all this sort of stuff. Mainly because we were hoping to find, what we really wanted to find and which we couldn't find, was how much did Hasbro pay for the IP? We'd love to know how much they gave Ken or Parker to own Action Force outright. Which I said, we can tell that they did it, but we can't tell how much they paid for it. And actually, we even asked Kurt Brzezinski, and he's like, I have no clue. I know they did it. I don't know how much they paid, you know, how much Hasbro paid down the rights to it. But I'd love to know that figure, you know, how much the brand was worth.
I even found the broker who brokered the deal is an agency that's still going in London. And I phoned them and I asked them straight out. And they said, you're not an employee of Hasbro. You're not an employee of Palitoy. So we can't tell you.
You guys have gotten an incredible amount of access if you're showing up at people's offices. And yet the ad agency is the one that shuts the door on you. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's funny. I'm not even sure Hasbro themselves know. It's probably one of those things that's just lost to time, you know. It's a brand they haven't used the name of in 30-something years. It's probably locked away in a vault somewhere, and not even Hasbro know how much they paid for it, you know.
When we first looked up the copyright records for the UK, we knew Hasbro had the copyright for Action Force, but I wanted to go back over the records to see when it transferred from Palitoy to Hasbro. And when we were looking that up, I noticed that Action Force is up for renewal in 2024. And when I went back in there recently just to verify, double check a couple of figures, a couple of numbers for the book, I saw that it had been renewed by Hasbro up until 2034, something like that. They're clearly, you know, keeping that IP alive. They're keeping their ownership over that. Have they got plans for the future? Who knows? But it would be great if they did.
I would love to see that.
I think it's interesting that they're still actively renewing the trademarks over here and the IP ownership. So that's interesting. They obviously see some value in it, even if they're not using it at the moment.
How does that affect?
It's a UK trademark. It's not a US trademark. So
there's two things here. There's trademark and there's IP ownership. Hasbro never owned the trademark to Red Shadows or Action Force in the US because, of course, they never sold those products branded as the Red Shadows or Action Force. So why would you bother? Which is why people have been able to pick up those trademarks in the US only. They do still own the trademark in Ireland, which is where Action Force was sold. Obviously, as Brian said, they still own that trademark up until last year when I checked for the book. And as Brian said, they've renewed it now for another decade. So they still own Action Force here, which is the only place that they've ever owned Action Force is the UK. They never bothered registering it in the US because it was called G.I. Joe in the US.
They probably own it in other countries then as well, though, since...
Presumably at least Germany. because they released the toys there in Germany as Action Force. So I don't have the resources to check every country's trademark registries.
You guys have shown up at all these offices. You've gotten turned down by the brokering agent. Who all have you talked to? Like, have you gotten good interviews for the comic, for the company, the toy? Like, how do you manage all of that?
It's actually been very difficult to find people who were working in Hasbro at the time to talk to. Part of the reason I wanted to do this book is because I think we mentioned it before in the show that the vehicles were all produced here in Ireland for the European market. I have to say, I exhausted every possibility of talking to any former employees of that factory. It's so difficult to find anybody who wants to talk about that. I know, Brian, you helped me trying to find people as well, and we had months of just hitting brick walls.
So just traumatic work experience?
I don't know. So maybe you should check the Action Force vehicles for asbestos or something. I wish I'd got a little bit more on that because, you know, the stuff was made here. It would be really nice to talk to some people who worked on it. But I kind of hit a brick wall there.
Where in Ireland were they made?
They were made down in Waterford, so down the very south. So Hasbro's had a factory here since the 1960s. They sold it about 6 or 7 years ago, I think in 2015. But it still produces Hasbro products. It's just owned by another company now. So board games and so on are still made here.
Since the 60s and still producing product. That's incredible.
Yes. And making essentially board games for the European market now. But, you know, for those glorious 3 years between 87 and 89, 1990, it was making all the Action Force vehicles. I really hope, like I said, to hope to tease that out a bit more. I have found some information. I do have an article in the book because we were able to find some articles and so on in newspapers at the time that talked about the factory and so on. But yeah, it's a shame I wasn't able to find any employees to speak to. Where we have got some very, very good interviews for the book is the comics creators. Because Marvel UK was a new company at the time, were relatively new in producing new content, and they were hiring people quite young, you know, working on Action Force and Transformers. We were able to get quite a lot of the main artists and writers and editors to talk to us for the book. So we have an interview with Steve White, who was the assistant editor on Action Force Weekly and the editor then on Action Force Monthly. And he also wrote most of the bios and so on that were printed in the comic. So we had these tack pages. I talked about, you know, White was kind of really interested in military tech and so on at the time. So he wrote, they used to do pages where he would talk about, this is what the Dragonfly does, and this is what the Awestriker does. And he wrote all those for the weekly and monthly as well. And we spoke with Simon Furman, who is probably best known as Transformers writer. Robin Smith, who was the artist on most of the Action Force monthly stories. We wrote to Mike Collins, who was writer and artist on Action Force, and also did our cover art for our book, Volume 2. I spoke to Kev Hopgood, who was the artist, and I didn't realise this until I was interviewing him. And I'm like, oh, you co-created War Machine.
Oh, Jesus.
Didn't occur to me until I do the interview with him, and he mentioned something about, oh, I was at the premiere for Captain America Civil War. And I was like, why was it the premiere for Captain America Civil War? In the back of my head. And I didn't think about it. And then I realized, oh, he created War Machine. That's why he's invited to the Avengers premieres. So yeah, just again, someone who worked on Action Force just going on to creating such a character.
That's good, getting out of bed money.
Oh yeah. We reached out to Kirk Bazigian as well. We just had some questions, you know, just around that kind of, you know, Hasbro taking G.I. Joe to an international stage and just to try and get some clarification about that. And Kirk was great, so obliging to share what knowledge he had. Obviously, he didn't have all of the answers we were looking for, but he did give us some key insights into the beginnings of that relationship between Palatoy and Hasbro, and you know, and that's detailed out in the book as well.
So was Kirk part of that? I mean, as brand manager, he wasn't VP of Boys Toys at that point yet. He was still just brand manager at G.I. Joe, right? Like, how was he involved?
What he explained to me was right from the get-go, Hasbro had plans to bring G.I. Joe international. It was always on the cards that these 3¾-inch action figures, we were going to take them outside the States. They already had the deal with Palatoy for the 12-inch, you know, G.I. Joe / Action Man. And Palitoy had used that deal to kind of to bring in some vehicles from G.I. Joe Real American Hero to flesh out Action Force Series 2. So it was Hasbro then approached Palitoy in 84 to say, look, would you take on bringing G.I. Joe, our product, selling it to your market? And as it happens that, you know, Palitoy had closed its design department. So it was a natural fit for them to kind of to take up that task. And then we got Action Force Series 3. And Kirk was able to kind of really shed a lot of light on how that happened for us, which is great. On the comic side of it, Paddy mentioned a lot of the different kind of writers and artists that we spoke to there. The big source of knowledge on the comic side is Rich Starkings. Rich did, he did an interview on the Talking Joe podcast, which Paddy and Mark said and interviewed him on that. And a lot of that information is in his interview for the book. But David did an exclusive interview with him, like a 2.5 hour interview with Rich. And the amount of information that's in that is just massive. We'd allocated 5 pages in the book for the Rich Starkings interview because we knew it was going to be the biggest interview. You know, it's he's the godfather of the Action Force Marvel UK comic. So he needed a lot of space, but the interview came in as 8 pages. So how are we going to fit that in? So Rich was great. He's been, you know, he was super. You know, he gave a lot of time to David, you know, to kind of go through stuff, as well as the time with Paddy and Mark too. Multiple collectors we've spoken to as well. Mostly Irish-based collectors, you know, with kind of specialist knowledge in certain areas. They've been really helpful, not just for kind of sharing their information, but giving us access to their collections so that we can make the book as visually comprehensive as possible. That's been really cool. You know, our research took us to the trademark registration office in the UK, the company's registration office in the UK, and even the broker who brokered the deal between Palitoy and Hasbro. The research journey in this has been massive, absolutely massive. Speaking for myself, I've come out the other end of it. I know way more about Action Force International Heroes than I even thought that there was to learn at the beginning of this process.
I mean, probably more than any sane person would ever want to know as well.
And yet, here I am wanting to read every word.
the other big help has been having access to the newspaper archive to find articles and so on. You know, there's stories you kind of, I wonder if those are true. And we were able to find kind of newspaper articles, contemporary newspaper articles from the time.
British Newspaper Archive, it's this brilliant resource. You have to sign up, you have to register, but you can get, and it is a paid subscription service, but you can get on online for free for a limited time period. So we started out with the free period, but we had to upgrade to the subscription service because there was just way too much information there. We couldn't get through all the information on the 7-day free period. But we found dozens of newspaper articles. We were looking for information about the USS Flag competition. This is this legendary competition. The USS Flag was never released in the UK or Ireland. But apparently there was a competition where stores had it out on display and kids could enter this competition. And if you won, you got a USS Flag. We wanted to get a sense of how big that was. Was it just one store? Was it one chain of stores? And, you know, it was much bigger than we thought it was. And we found newspaper articles from all over the UK talking about the USS Flag competition.
That's incredible.
Some of them were big chains, some of them were small stores. The British Newspaper Archive was really helpful to kind of verify, not just verify the story, but to really let us know how big of a deal that actually was.
You didn't know about this competition as a kid?
No, God, no, no.
It wasn't ran in Ireland. It was only ran in England and Scotland and Wales.
They skipped you?
They skipped us. Obviously, they didn't want to bother shipping over a flag across the Irish Sea. Although it's funny, something else we found out while researching the book is that they did run an Irish competition to win Fortress Maximus, who also wasn't released in the UK and Ireland at the time by Hasbro. But there was a competition run in Ireland only to win a Fort Max. So we lost out of the flag, but we did get the biggest transformer of all time up to that point.
I grew up here and I didn't see the flag until I was an adult.
Wow. We just assumed they were like everywhere. They were growing on trees in America. Well, I was 50 when I saw a USS flag in person, and it was mint in box.
That's a beautiful thing to see. Patty, I know you were bouncing in and out. Did you get through the interviews?
Jeff Senior, obviously, who did tons of Action Force art for Action Force Weekly. So, and I had a lovely chat with him, I have to say. Again, someone who we had scheduled, you know, an hour, and we could have gone on all night because he was just happy to talk to somebody about it.
That's the best.
Yeah, the big thing I have from this is how eager they all were to talk about the book and their memories working on it, even though it obviously was, for a lot of them, it was their very early in their career, they barely remember it. It's 40 years ago now. But they all seem to have fond memories of working on it, at least. And so they were all very eager to talk about it to us.
I mean, that's incredible. That's always the best when you're just asking for a couple moments and they open up and give you a whole evening. I'm excited to read these because obviously some of these names I'm not going to know, but many of them, because Action Force was early in their career and they've gone on to do all over the world and in multiple mediums, so many great things. There's a lot of these names that I adore. And so to hear about their beginning process and their early things, I don't know. I'm excited to read all of this.
It's going to be a great read. What I discovered from the interviews was that both Mike Collins and Jeff Senior both cite the artist John Burns as being their inspiration to get into comics. And the reason being is that he's from the same town as they were from. And that made them feel, if he can do it, I can do it.
That's awesome.
It works. It's perfect.
And honestly, until Jeff Senior said it to me, I didn't know that John Byrne was from the UK. I assumed he was American.
I'm not sure if I knew where he was from either.
One final thing on the book, I mean, it's really just to give an update. We're almost finished the design. So obviously all the research is done. The content is all written and created. The assembly side of it, that design of it, that's the task that we're on right now. We'll need a couple of days just to finish that off. We'll have to proofread it ourselves before we can get it to Hasbro for them to review it. So where we're at, as of this recording, we're probably 2-3 days away from finishing everything and getting it to Hasbro for them to review it. We'll do another proofread anyway when it's with Hasbro, because it won't make any material change. It'll just be like grammar, spellings, stuff like that. We'll get all that cleaned up and I'll do all the pre-press work while it's with Hasbro. And we're expecting them to have it for a couple of weeks. By that time, hopefully, if they don't have any changes they need made, we'll be in a position to go straight to press. So we're looking 2.5-3 weeks with the printer. That's coming in way ahead of our kind of schedule that we outlined in the Kickstarter. And it would mean, you know, books in hand before Christmas for the backers.
That's incredible. And if you didn't back it, you can pre-order it at TotalToyBooks.com.
That's it.
Just this one volume, or is there other things that they can purchase from you guys?
Just the pre-order right now for Total Action Force Volume 2. And those pre-orders will be processed after we get all the Kickstarter backers sent out. So once they're out, the pre-orders then, we'll just kind of follow straight in behind that. We will add more stuff to the site as time goes. But for now, it's just that first book. We definitely want to do a reprint, even if it's just a soft cover of Total Action Force, The Battle Years.
That'll be another Kickstarter, or will that go just be a pre-order?
Probably just to manage kind of the risk and to really get a good sense of the demand, we'll bring that to Kickstarter.
Excellent.
Depending on what kind of reaction we get to that, I mean, we probably will get a few overs printed, and then they'll go up for pre-order on the website then.
I guess the other order of business then, and what is not on the pre-order site right now, maybe one day, RoboSkull. How's that coming?
Paddy, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, so it's written. So we gave Ben Conley a very dense outline at the start of the year as to how it would work. And we've managed to beat that outline by 2 months.
Wow.
Because, you know, we thought, oh, you were going to need X amount of time for research and putting the imagery together and then writing the thing. But actually, it came together super quickly because Ben, you know, obviously has quite a lot of the arc ready to go. And we were just able to get that all off him on Dropbox. And then the research, obviously, I had a lot of it done for the matching years. I was able to, again, sit down with Bob and get a fairly comprehensive interview again, just particularly on the RoboSkull. The first chapter of the book is about the vintage RoboSkull. So a little bit of history of Action Force, obviously not as dense as it was in Total Action Force, the Battle Years. and then a fairly comprehensive history of the RoboSkull vehicle itself. And again, Bob allowed us access to his stash of archival material for that too. So we're going pre-dense on the design process for the vintage vehicle. Then I have a write-up and designer commentary on the Mark II as well. So I managed to speak to everybody at Skeletron. I spoke to Alex Wu, who is the loveliest person in the world. Alex, who's been the most devoted in design work for the Mark II. He's also worked with Boss Fight on the Series E line, and that's how I kind of know him through Boss Fight. And so, again, like I said, we have a section on the designer commentary and a gallery of the various concept art stages. Talk about the artists, obviously, who contributed to the box art. So that's Ian Kennedy and Ken Kelly.
Yeah.
We were hoping to interview them for the book. Now, obviously, both of them died in the last few years while I was in the process of organizing interviews with them.
Yeah.
I have been able to get some archival material on them. We have processed shots from them of the work they contributed to the project as well. So that'll all be in the book. I don't know if we've mentioned this before on air, but our friend William Robbie, who allowed us to unbox his flag to take pictures of the Skeletron prototype, he grew up next door to Ken Kelly.
Whoa.
We had organized an interview because literally Bill has his home phone number. We were supposed to schedule an interview so I could interview Ken for the book, and then he passed away. So just again, pure bad luck. But it was so bizarre that we had that connection. I mentioned to Bill, Ken Kelly did the art. Bill is like, wait, Ken Kelly did the art? As in my dad's neighbor, Ken Kelly? Yes, it was the same Ken Kelly.
That's incredible.
Because obviously Bill knew that his next door neighbor was a famous artist. But yeah, just it's bizarre, isn't it? That it's a small world. It really is.
Yeah.
That one of my best friends could be his neighbor. But yeah, again, sadly we didn't get that done. But we do have, let's say, we have process shots from both Ian and Ken that will be in the book. That part of it's done. I think our plan is once Brian gets Action Force set to press, he'll start churning out designed pages for that book. We intend having the full thing ready for Ben for print by the end of the year. And again, once you start Brian designing, he doesn't stop. You manage, 194 pages in the space of a month, Brian, so a 96-page book is not going to be any...
It'd be a walk in a park compared to this.
We talked about this in March. It's really incredible that you guys are right there, is that you can, do these nice portfolios of both of these men in this book as their final projects, and to have had these touch points between them and our community and you guys directly. That's going to be a nice portion of the book. I'm very much looking forward to that on both of them.
The one thing you could say about both of them is their art for RoboSkull is some of their best ever art as well. Like, even though they passed away in the making, after making it, but their work is still so vibrant. Ian Kennedy's art just pops still. He's 76 years working in comics, and his art for RoboSkull is as good as anything he ever did. And it's the same with Ken Kelly's art. That card art he's done for the characters is just magnificent. And the fact that they were producing such great content for such great art for so long is something that does need to be celebrated, I think, in the book.
Well, I'm glad the two of you have been given that opportunity and are going to put it in our hands. Do you have any photography left to do, Brian, on either of these, or are both of these just down to you putting on the other hat, the designer hat?
On the Total Action Force, all that photography is done. Though, I'll still continue to take shots with Action Force toys. Everything I need for the book, I have. But on RoboSkull, there's definitely still a lot more photography to do, because at the time I had the RoboSkull, that's all I had. We just seen the 4-inch Wolf Trooper revealed there this week.
Oh, that was gorgeous.
Beautiful. So I can't wait to get some of these kind of figure prototypes in hand and photograph them for the book. So that's stuff that'll probably roll, to the other side of Christmas. But that'll give me a lot of time to do all the other work I need to do, kind of getting the text typeset, getting the art the actual art itself kind of laid out, which we have all of that. And then I can slot in the photography then next year once we have all that finished. And then it'll be off to print in time to have those books ready to go when everybody else, when all the other toys are ready to go to the backers.
That's awesome. Besides volume one being a Kickstarter later on for people that missed the first one a couple years ago, and volume two, if you missed the Kickstarter, you need to pre-order it now. RoboSkull is, I guess you guys are ahead of schedule, so now you're just waiting on the toy to show up so that you can ship the book out also. But you guys are not, I don't know if you guys just hate free time or what it is, but you also have another book that is Star Wars based. I got to tell you, I have gone through all 400 pages of this thing so many times. You know I read the text, Brian, because I reached out to you with someone you mentioned in the book, and I was like, well, he lives here and he does this. Come to the U.S. You could stay in my house, or, you know, you don't even have to get a hotel. Bring Patty. And then the photographs. And so I was hoping while we're on, we could talk about this a little bit, because I don't collect Star Wars toys, but I collect Star Wars books. And so I have a 5x6 bookshelf that is just completely Star Wars books. Now I am intensely excited and interested in getting your Star Wars book to put on my Star Wars shelf.
Yes. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's or is not familiar with it, I recreated the original trilogy movies with vintage Kenner toys. Every single scene, not shot by shot, but all the main scenes are there. I've actually taken thousands of photographs and got it down to, you know, about 400 in the digital version of the book, which we put up online. And the reason why the digital version is online is that because it's clearly telling the story of Star Wars, it's an infringement on Lucasfilm's IP, so we can't sell it in its current format. We've made kind of many attempts to contact publishers or literary agents who would maybe take the book on. We haven't got any responses. And I've tried, you know, contacting Lucasfilm to see would they give us a license, and Lucasfilm, you know, won't engage with us because of their own kind of contracts. They can't engage with kind of unsolicited submissions from books. With a kind of a publishing impasse, we can't self-publish because it would be illegal. We can't find a licensed publisher to take it on. So we could just shelve it and never share it with anybody. Or, you know, I just thought, well, we'll just put it up on issue, get it out there to the public, let people see it. And that might even help spread the word a little bit. And maybe we'll find that kind of publisher who could bring it on. What we've shared on issue is just, it's a photo book. It's just the photos. But myself and Patty have kind of explored, what kind of story could we tell about Star Wars? How could we make like a total Star Wars and bring the story to life, maybe in a way that people wouldn't be as familiar with, like what we've done with Action Force? And we've bounced loads of ideas back and forth on that. And Patty's actually already written loads of content for that book. It already exists.
Your foreword mentions how much Patty has written.
Yes.
So I was actually surprised when I was just going through the photos without the words. And I was like, I need to see what's next. I need to see what is written, as well as gorgeous photographs.
Essentially, it would have been similar. It's similar in concept to Total Action Force. It's the Palatoy history of the Palatoy toy line, which obviously is the figures we're taking the pictures of, the Palatoy releases. So we did it's kind of a Star Wars story told from the Palatoy aspect.
Perfect.
Going into in depth on the play sets in particular is something we wanted to talk about a lot, because it's something that we kind of get passed over a little bit in other books about Star Wars toys, where our memories of recreating Star Wars is playing with play sets and imagining that they were bigger than they were, and that they were in this, you know, the galaxy far, far away, which is what Brian's trying to do with the images he's taking, where he's trying to show what we imagined when we were kids and you're playing with the playset, you know, your Death Star playset or your Star Destroyer, but expanded, because that's what you imagined when you were kids. And that was kind of the concept behind the book. And that's why we chose the name we did, The Creating Adventure, because you were using the playset and the figures to create your own adventures in that universe. that were far bigger than what the toys were. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that was the concept. And obviously, as Brian said, we spent quite some time shopping with the publishers and so on. We just never able to. We got close a couple of times, nearly getting your contracts done, and just sheer bad luck. But that's publishing for you. There's twice as many projects that don't go as that do. And it just, you know, very nearly made it to the finish line a couple of occasions. And lots of great feedback from you know, people, even at Lucasfilm, have come to us and said, the book is amazing. I really hope one of our licensors picks it up. But again, like I said, these things, you know, sometimes they just don't go. But I think we wanted to get the book, you know, we've done so much work on it, that we wanted to at least get the imagery out there so that people could enjoy it.
Whether it comes out in the way that you've put it out on Instagram or website, or if you guys transition into more of a total Star Wars, like, or both, like, I definitely want this on my shelf. This is, it's incredible. The photographs are, I think the photographs are better than my imagination when I was a kid.
Wow.
They capture the scenes so well. And if it's a public link, we'll definitely put it out with this conversation, because I hadn't read it until you had sent it over, or seen it until you had sent it over. The story that you have in the beginning of trying to come up with this book and partner with different people, and the people around the world that you've thanked as being helpful. Obviously, you know, it's Disney and Lucas. There's more than just a publisher saying sure. The fact that the two of you have partnered yet again just makes it even more like, I need this in paper form. I've already made a space for it. Like, I know where it's going to go on the shelf.
I've no doubt that will happen. That book will happen. I really believe that it will. Our focus has kind of gone off it, because obviously Total Action Force Volume 2 is really, we just have to get that over the line now. That's going to consume our kind of time for the next, you know, couple of months while we get it out to backers. But 2023, things are going to open up for us again, you know, schedule-wise, and we can start knocking on a few more doors. There's ways around the IP issue. Different photographs that don't tell the story of Star Wars, the Star Wars movies in a linear format, would be one of those ways to kind of get around the IP. It's a lot more work on the photography side, because it kind of have to go back to the drawing board. But that's definitely an option that, you know, that I'm looking at. Because we've got great text content, we've got great contacts with the people in Palatoy to talk to them. And we know that people will want this book. It's a very different kind of market or fan base than for Action Force. So we'd be confident that in some way, shape, or form, yes, we can make this happen.
It really is incredible. And one of the things, now, Brian, you and I talked about, it was such a big moment for me. It's just opening the first page and seeing this picture of a young boy in front of a Star Wars collection in a red shirt. And he's got nice, thick, poofy hair. Could be an 80s picture. And then the next page is you, same setup. And it was quickly like, oh, that's not a picture of Brian when he was a child. That's a picture of Brian's child. And then Brian. Holy shit, man. That hit me hard. You know, we've talked, you know, I don't have a line between my collection and Alexander's collection. And so to see that picture with you guys, opening the book, I was immediately sold, because that's just a beautiful picture.
I love that you brought that up. And we did chat about this before. And I remember saying to you that you were the first person to comment on that photo. Because everybody talks about the toys, you know, the toy photos. But that was a real personal photo for me, a couple of different levels. It was a great moment to have with Cahal, my son. We did the setup together. He took the photograph of me and I took the photograph of him.
That's beautiful.
And he really wanted to do it. You know, he wasn't like, he was saying to me, Dad, because I, you know, broached the idea with him. Maybe we could do a shot and I'll take a picture of you. And, you know, you kind of represent like how I played with toys as a kid. Yeah, and he was totally into it. And then I kind of didn't have a deadline to do the shot, but he would keep reminding me every kind of few weeks, Dad, when are we going to do that shot? When are we going to do that shot? One weekend, we set it up. And we had great fun kind of getting the setup and stuff. And we took, there's loads of outtakes from that as well, you know, where either he's blinking or I'm blinking, or you know, he kind of stands up as the shot's being taken and his headset is not. We had great fun with that. So we had that moment together. That was brilliant. But then it is symbolic for me as well, because the whole idea of that shot was me playing with my toys when I was his age, and now I'm still playing with the toys in a different way, because the photography is a big part of it for me now. But that playing with the toys and getting joy from the toys, that's still there. And that's going to be there for a long, long time yet, you know.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.